Good morning, and welcome to a special edition of The Beacon. Special edition of The Beacon today. You know, in the past, we've done what we call profile shows, where we take a look at individuals and talk about how they've dealt with being blind or visually impaired, either for part of their life and how they've made the adjustments, or for the fact that they may have been totally blind since birth and actually have had made themselves a pretty productive life. Well, what we're going to do today, it's basically on the same principle as our profile shows, but what it is we're going to talk about a specific eye disease, and that eye disease we're talking about is Stargardt's disease. Now, to be quite honest with you, until I started doing work at the Chicago Lighthouse, I never knew what Stargardt's disease was. And then as I've gone along in my work here over the last few years, I've discovered there's quite a few people who have Stargardt's disease, including our very own Tom Persky, who does the wonderful job at the Adaptive Tech Corner that will be coming up a little bit later on in the program. So what we figured we'd do is there may be some of you out there who have an eye condition. You really are maybe on the skittish side about going in and seeing either an optometrist or a ophthalmologist, but know there's something wrong and that something needs to be done. So what we've invited to talk about this morning on the program is our own Dr. Gerald Fishman from the Pangaea Center for Inherited Retinal Research at the Chicago Lighthouse, and also one of his associates, Dr. Houseworth, who has come up. He's a fellow and he's worked with Dr. Fishman on a few different projects related to retina disease. So in the first part of our program this morning, we're going to be talking about the clinical side. What is Stargardt's disease? Who is susceptible to getting it? And is there a cure? Is there a treatment? What can be done to help the person out who's starting to develop the disease? And is it something that eventually leads to blindness? We'll touch all of those topics as we talk to the two doctors this morning. Then later on in the broadcast, we're going to visit with our own Tom Persky to talk about his life of having found out he had Stargardt's disease when he was in his 20s. And there's also a young lady who started working with us at Chris Radio. And you've heard me talk about Chris on the broadcast before. It's the Chicagoland Radio Information Service. She started working with us as a intern, and turns out she had Stargardt's. She had known Tom for quite a few years, her and her family, and her name is Anam Shafi. She'll be joining us in the second half, and we're going to get two different perspectives from someone who has lived with Stargardt's all his life and has made a very productive life for himself, and then Anam, who's starting out and actually doing quite well herself, very well-spoken, very well-educated, and moving on to hopefully have a great career in hospitality later on. So sit back, relax, grab a cup of coffee, and we'll get started by finding about the clinical side of Stargardt's disease when our Beacon show continues. I'm Bill Jerk. Oh, by the way, Lainey's got the week off this week. She'll be back with us next week. She has to come back next week because that's her birthday weekend, and we have to razz the you-know-what out of her. So she'll be back here with us next week on the program. The show is The Beacon, and coming up, a clinical look at Stargardt's disease right after this.
If you enjoy listening to The Beacon, why not become part of the family? You can tell our audience about your product or service at a reasonable cost. We will even help you produce your message in a way that will capture our listeners' ear for you. By advertising on The Beacon, you will not only reach thousands of people who need and want your product or service, don't have an agency, or wouldn't know the first thing about producing a radio commercial, let The Beacon staff help you write and produce your message. Now that the economy is picking up and people are spending more on things they need, this is the perfect opportunity for you to get the word out. For more information and a free consultation, just call Bill Jurek at 312-997-3678 or email Bill at bill.jurek@chicagolighthouse.org. Come on, join the Beacon family and increase your sales by reaching an audience that really wants to hear your message. Call today at 312-997-3678. Again, that's 312-997-3678 or bill.jurek@chicagolighthouse.org.
Every once in a while on our program, we talk about a specific eye disease. We zero in on it and try to get as much detail about the disease as possible. Today we're going to talk about Stargardt's disease. I wasn't aware of it until I met Tom Persky here at the Chicago Lighthouse, and that's the eye condition he has, and I found that there are quite a few people here who actually have Stargardt's disease. Joining me on the show is our esteemed colleague and the guy we turn to when we really don't know what to, who else to turn to, and Dr. Gerald Fishman, who heads up the Pangier Center for Retina Research. Dr. Fishman, thanks for joining us.
Nice to be here, Bill.
I'm glad to have you with us. And he brought a guest with him, Dr. Bill Houseworth, right?
Correct.
Good. All right, I got it right. Thank God. Because we were kidding about that before we got on the air over here. Brief explanation, because you said before we sat down here and started a recording that recognition of Stargardt's was over 100 years ago, right?
That's right.
Tell me about the how it was discovered or how it got to be known as the as Stargardt's.
Well, let me give you a thumbnail sketch of the disease itself. As you indicated, it was described in 1909 by a German eye doctor who realized the familial nature of the disease, that it could occur within the same family. It is the most frequently acquired inherited blinding retinal disease. It's a very democratic disease in that it can affect both genders. It affects all nationalities and affects about 1 in 8,000 to 1 in 10,000 individuals in the United States. In the majority of instances, it will lead to legal blindness.
Okay.
Now, one important element of what we have learned over the decades since Stargardt described this disease, is that we now know the genetic defect that causes the disease.
Mm.
And when you have identified the gene defect, it often gives you an idea of what's gone wrong in the retina.
Okay.
Why the seeing cells, the rods and cones, are deteriorating, which again will lead to visual loss.
Mm-hmm.
And by knowing that in these patients, you can devise various treatment strategies that can be used to treat this disorder. Also, you can develop animal models that have the same gene defect. And by doing that, you can experiment on the animals with treatments to have an idea what might be effective in the humans. I think it might be of value to hear from my colleague, Dr. Houseworth, who can tell us a little bit more about some of these treatment strategies that are in progress and perhaps even future elements of treatment for this disease.
If I remember correctly, Dr. Houseworth, you were here, you and I had talked about something related to rods and cones before. You were on our program maybe about a year and a half ago or so. And as a follow-up to what Dr. Fishman said, has a lot changed in the treatment of Stargardt's?
Yes, we're really at a very interesting period of treatments for Stargardt's and other similar gene defects that cause blindness.
Mm-hmm.
In that, over the past year, actually, a clinical trial has been initiated for Stargardt's disease.
Mm-hmm.
It involves, in this case, and in the case, and in my work, it involves putting the gene into a virus. Now that sounds a little frightening, but what we do is take the genes out of the virus that are normally there that might cause disease,
mm-hmm.
and replace them with the gene that the patients are missing. In this case, they need a good copy of the Stargardt's.
Right. Do what you're seeing, or maybe it's too early to tell from the research that's being done, are you seeing that it can reverse the effect of Stargardt's, or is it just a way of treating it so that it doesn't progress any further?
Well, we don't know yet. The first patients have been, I think, treated for in the order of 6 months or 9 months mm-hmm. now, but we don't know the results of how those patients are responding to treatment. What we do know is that it has been proven to be generally safe. The procedure of this is an injection. You have mm-hmm. to take this homemade virus, if you will,
sure.
and inject it into the eye so that it comes in contact with the rods and cones and can deliver its gene, the Stargardt's gene in this case, to those cells that are still there.
You're also doing research, if I'm not mistaken. I've heard of this, the insertion of the virus for other research as well, right, with retina? It's not only
yes.
Stargardt's that you're doing?
No, it's not just for Stargardt's.
Right.
No, there's a clinical trial which is now going on in three or four places in this country and in Europe and the Middle East for a childhood form of blindness called LCA.
Mm-hmm.
That's been going on for over 6 years now, and about 60 patients have been treated, and most of them, in fact, have benefited visually from the treatment.
When you
gain some vision.
When you look back now, because you said, when Dr. Fishman, you were mentioning that it's a disease that goes the whole spectrum of humanity. And can you detect it early on, let's say pre-birth, that somebody is, an infant will possibly be infected with Stargardt's? And is there anything to do intrauteral?
Well, we know that the disease is transmitted as a recessive trait, which mm-hmm. means both parents carry the gene, and each time they have a child, each pregnancy is at 25% risk.
Mm.
So when we identify the particular mutation in a family, in principle, one could determine the genetic makeup either by a biopsy of the placenta or aspiration of embryonic fluid in the placental
right.
sac. One could determine that, but the question is, would one want to take the risk of potentially precipitating a spontaneous miscarriage
right.
in order to know, when really, within the first couple of years, in general, a couple of years after birth, you can tell whether the child has changes in the retina that are consistent with Stargardt disease.
Are you able to, now you said it's a recessive trait in both parents. Are you able to see through any type of a test whether or not the trait has a good possibility of being transferred, and does it skip generations?
No, it normally wouldn't skip generations, unlike certain dominant traits, which might skip generations.
Mm-hmm.
And you can't predict ahead of time which pregnancy is going to be that 25%.
Right.
It'll simply depend if they get an abnormal gene from both mom and dad, and then they will have Stargardt disease. And that probability, as I said, is 25%.
Caught early enough. Because you said you can catch it, you know, when a child is born in the first year or two. Are you able to slow down or even stop the progression of the disease?
Well, not yet, but in terms of both what Dr. Howsworth has mentioned, mm-hmm. and he may want to comment on the stem cell research going on, and maybe there will be pharmacological studies that may slow down the course of the disease.
Right.
But right now, there is no magic bullet in terms of being able to prevent or even slow down. But I think once we find out the results of the current treatment trials, perhaps a year from now, the answer to that question will be different.
Okay. Now, as far as developing the disease, does it necessarily show up in childhood all the time, or is it something that could hit you later on in life? By that I mean, you know, like after your teens or in your teens and into your 20s?
Well, you're either intuitive or perspicacious, because in fact it does come at different times. The most frequent is observed generally in patients by age 8 to 15.
Mm-hmm.
But there's also a later onset, which can show up in the 30s or 40s.
Okay.
In older individuals, middle age. They probably showed signs of it if they had been examined earlier, but they may not have symptoms till they're in their 30s or 40s.
We're talking to Dr. Gerald Fishman from the Pangaea Center for Retina Research at the Chicago Lighthouse, and also Dr. Bill Houseworth. You're from down in Florida, if I'm not
That's
right.
Correct. Yeah.
You're still doing research down there in Jacksonville?
Oh, yes.
Okay.
Yeah. Actually, Gainesville, University.
Gainesville. Okay, I'm sorry. Yeah. The competition is in Jacksonville, isn't it?
Well,
for University of Florida and then Florida State, or where's Florida State?
Florida State is in Tallahassee,
yeah.
And the university actually purchased the hospital in Jacksonville, so they're not competition anymore.
Not anymore. Okay, that's very good. Having said this, that you know that it can develop later in life. Does it always mean that somebody's going to go totally blind, or is there a real good likelihood that they may just be legally blind?
Well, another important question, Bill, and I'm glad you asked that, because while the majority of patients ultimately will become legally blind, in other words, no better than 20/200 with best correction,
mm-hmm.
It is extremely rare that a patient with Stargardt disease will ever lose all vision.
Mm-hmm.
And the overwhelming majority will almost always be able to read some letters on a vision chart.
Right.
So with oftentimes with appropriate visual aids or ability to learn how to ambulate suitably, they can lead remarkably independent lives. And I understand you're probably going to be interviewing a few patients here from the Lighthouse,
right,
afflicted with this disease, and they'll be living testimonials as to what these people can accomplish.
And you know, and the thing that amazes me about it is, because of what you're saying about being legally blind, you know, I watch Tom Persky, who comes up here and records the segment for our program, and I see him in the hall with representatives from different companies as he talks about product. He doesn't use a cane. I think, if I'm not mistaken, one of the young ladies who actually started out as an intern with us in the radio station, Anam Shafi, doesn't use a cane at all either. So, in other words, someone could have Stargardt's and yet you not even know it unless you took a look at them and saw that they're having difficulty in seeing things.
Yes, correct. And that's both good and maybe in some instances not so good.
Mm.
Because when these people cross streets and are potentially in harm's way,
sure,
to look at them, just as you said, you wouldn't know that they have such a visual problem. And the reason they do reasonably well, and most of them do not need canes, is that the disease mainly, in the majority of individuals, affects selectively the straight ahead or center vision. But the side vision often remains very good. On the other hand, some of them do have difficulty adjusting when they go from a bright light to a dim light.
Right.
They have difficulty with their night vision.
But that's where somebody like the optometrist that we have in the low vision clinic can help someone like this find the aids and find whatever eye wear that they need to get to actually make their life easier, more tolerable, and then do away with that glare factor that you were mentioning.
True, that's right.
Good. At least I'm on the right track. Dr. Houseworth, where are you going with the research? Where do you see it going, let's say, within the next year, maybe 5 years or so?
I would say a 3 to 5 year timeline, there will be additional gene therapy trials,
mm-hmm,
for Stargardt's using different viruses, maybe more effective viruses. And also on the horizon, probably a little longer than 5 years from now, is stem cell therapy.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that will probably be most useful in very late-stage Stargardt's disease.
When you say late-stage, you're talking later in life or later in the progression of the
later
disease?
Later in the progression of the disease,
okay,
when many cells have been lost.
Mm-hmm.
Because before the cells are lost, The option of gene therapy seems most reasonable because there are cells there to accept the gene.
Sure.
But when those cells are lost, gene therapy is pretty obviously not going to do you any good if the cells are not there to accept the gene.
Right.
So in that case, you may be able to, and people are working very hard on this, to put cells back into the retina that will replace the cells that you have lost and restore some normal function. It's still a ways off because we have to understand exactly what cells to put in, how to treat those cells. And if you were to think about rejection of those cells, the best cells to put in would be the patient's own cells after you have generated a rod or a cone type of cell.
Mm-hmm.
However, those cells would still have the mutation. So people are working on not only stem cells, but then what they call autologous stem cells, which are your own cells. But for a patient, then those cells need to be corrected. They need to have their gene defect in Stargardt's gene corrected. So there's several layers of progress that need to be made for stem cells to become a viable option.
With the stem cells that we're talking about, I think you and I had a conversation once before, Dr. Fishman, too, about taking cells from like, let's say, the forearm or another part of the body. Is that basically what we're talking about, or is it totally different with the stem cell?
If I could answer that.
Sure, go ahead.
There are really two basic kinds of stem cells, at least concepts. Now, one is embryonic stem cells, in which you have many cells that have the potential to turn into rods and cones if you can treat them correctly.
Okay.
That is problematical both practically and ethically because you need embryos. You need embryonic tissue for that. The other option is a bit newer option called induced pluripotent stem cells or IPS cells. And that's what you're referring to when you say take skin cells, basically.
Right.
And in that case, we've learned at least partly how to take skin cells, treat them with chemicals in a dish, and have them change into many different kinds of cells that are normally found in the body. And one of those cells are rods and cones. It's not a very efficient process yet, but it will get more efficient.
Right.
And as it does, there will be a source of light-sensing cells, rods and cones, that may be implantable, transferable into a Stargardt's patient.
Does somebody with Stargardt's have difficulty in color detection and that sort of thing?
Yes is a quick answer.
Okay.
But it's not like certain other diseases that present with problems with color vision. Often they have difficulty with color vision because they've got these central blind spots because of the scars in the macula. While outside of the macula, many times the cones are still working and they have color vision.
Mm-hmm.
Bill, if I could comment on one other thing from a practical point of view. Getting back to the value of having animal models with the same gene defect. It's important for what we have learned from studying these animals. For example, if you take a mouse that, again, programmed to have the same gene defect as the patients, and you raise them in more of a light environment, their retinas undergo more rapid deterioration raised in the light environment.
Really?
And two, if you feed those animals extra vitamin A, they also deteriorate more rapidly in terms of their retina. So that teaches us, one, the value of animal models, but also it warns patients that not to over-medicate themselves, as they often do.
Mm-hmm.
They come in on many high-potency vitamin supplements that they're really way over-medicating.
Right.
And that goes for not only vitamins, but for herbal medications that they come in taking a wheelbarrow full of these herbal medications. So one has to be careful not to over-medicate themselves.
You know, that's an interesting point because everybody usually turns to the herbal and the vitamins and that sort of thing, supplements, to say, well, if I take more of this, it's gotta be a better thing for me. There was a line from one of the popular TV shows today. It's one of my favorite shows. It's The Big Bang Theory. And the lead character was walking through a supermarket with a neighbor, And she was buying all these vitamins. And he says, why are you spending all that money on these vitamins? He says, because all you're doing is going to have a more expensive urine out of the deal. He says, your body only takes in so much and then it has to get rid of the rest of it. So that only holds true from what you're saying here then. Be careful what you do. Now, when you say light, are we talking about a bright environment? Or are we talking that maybe somebody should protect their eyes more with dark glasses or shaded glasses?
Well, I suppose certainly the intensity of light has some bearing on it.
Yeah.
But what probably is at least equal and conceivably even more important is the wavelength of light that's getting into the eye.
Okay.
So the important message is if you're going to wear sunglasses, and you should if you have Stargardt disease, and for that matter, all of us,
sure,
you should get a pair that filters out not only ultraviolet, but blue light. Because blue eye, compared to red light, let's say, mm-hmm, is more potentially detrimental to the retina. So if you obtain a brown pair of sunglasses, it's highly more likely to filter out blue light, which is why we recommend that for our patients.
Wow, and it probably is a good rule for the general public, too. Well, listen, thanks for coming in and explaining this. We're going to take a quick break here, and then we're going to invite Tom and a few other people who work at the Lighthouse to come in and talk about how they've had to adjust to and still able to lead normal lives with Stargardt's disease and, see exactly what their lifestyle has been like. Thanks to Dr. Gerald Fishman, who heads up our clinic, the Pangier Center for Retina Research here at the Chicago Lighthouse, and also Dr. Bill Houseworth, who's graciously come in and joined us to tell us a little bit more about the research. We'll have to check back with you guys again maybe in about a year or so or something down the line. And if you happen to have something that comes up you think the audience would be interested in, I'd love to hear from both of you.
We'll make it a date, huh, Bill?
Thank you, we will.
Sounds like a plan. We'll be back with more. We'll visit with our panel right after this.
Imagine me, a dog, moving in with a human. I didn't know how it would work. Turns out, my human's pretty entertaining. For instance, every time I give my human his ball, he throws it as far as he can. And I'm like, dude, that's your ball. So I go get it, but he just throws it. Again! I gotta say, though, the more he does it, the funnier it is. I love my human.
A person is the best thing to happen to a shelter pet. Be that person. Adopt. Brought to you by the Ad Council and the ShelterPetProject.org.
Welcome back to our Beacon program, our special edition of the program here, and we're so glad that you were able to join us on the show this morning. If you'd like to be part of our program, it's real easy. You can either join us as an advertiser, potential advertiser, and we'll help you do everything. We'll help you write the copy. We'll help you develop ideas that may make your product or service very attractive to our audience on the program here. And we reach quite a large audience in the Chicago area as well as regionally here, and it seems like the economy seems to be moving along now where people are not only buying the essential things that they need, but they're also starting to invest in some of those I want those articles. You know, we all have those on our list. If I only had money, I could do this. Well, I think people are finding themselves in a situation now where they have a little more spendable income. So if you'd like to advertise on the program, our rates are really reasonable. I'd be more than glad to talk to you about it. You can contact me at the Chicago Lighthouse at 312-997-3678. Again, 312-997-3678. Let's talk a little bit about your product. It could be an internet product alone. It could be a bricks and mortar type of product. It could be a service that you provide. Whatever the case may be, I'm sure we can help you design an advertising campaign that will hopefully bring in customers for your business and clients that you can eventually turn into friends as well as clients. So again, contact me if you'd like to advertise on the Beacon. The telephone number here is 312-997-3678. And if I'm not there or if I'm on the other line, just leave a message and I promise I'll get back to you real quick. Now, we're doing our program on Stargardt's disease. So what I want to do now is introduce you to two people who have Stargardt's. And that's our own Tom Pertzky and Anam Shafi, who is finishing up her college education. And they're going to give us a perspective from two different sides of life, from an older perspective, someone who's had to deal with Stargardt's all of his life, to Anam, who's actually, I think she's had it from a very young age, but was able to adapt and make her world work for her as well. So let's stop in and visit now with Tom and with Anam and find out a little bit about the human side of Stargardt's disease. We're continuing on our discussion about Stargardt's disease this morning on the Beacon Show, and we're going to bring in a couple of people who actually have Stargardt's. So one of them you know from our program all the time, and that's Tom Persky, who has his little bitty little corner here on the program.
Right. Hi, Bill.
How are you, Tom?
Good.
And all your fans, you know, Audrey right. Nodo and the whole group
the
out
whole
there.
Group, that, yeah, that, Tom and, yeah, and Sammy. And, yeah,
yeah, you know, the whole group loves you out there, you know. So they, it's the highlight of the show. They go, the heck with the first 40 minutes. You know, we're waiting for Persky to get out of the air. And Anam, I said that right?
Anam,
okay. Like I said it wrong. Anam Sheffy's with us. She started out originally as an intern with us at Chris Radio. But, Tom, you had known her prior to that because of the fact that she has Stargardt's,
right,
too.
Right. And the connection with Dr. Fishman has been really interesting over the years because he and I started a foundation in 1991 for Stargardt disease here in Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
And we had that was our first convention. Dr. Fishman was the lead speaker. Dr. Janet Slick was also a speaker.
No kidding.
At the time, associate professor at UIC. And then I was a speaker. And we had panel discussions and things like that. About 65 people
showed
from
up
all over the United States. Most of them had never met one other person with Stargardt disease.
Yeah.
Mm. We did that several years in a row, and it was maybe a couple of years later that Anam and her family came, and I met them, and Anam was only 8 years old, and I was like 13, I think.
You know, this is radio. They have licenses to protect here about false information there, Persky.
Yeah.
But, you know, and the interesting thing is, you kind of watched Anam grow up with Stargardt's.
Yes, uh-huh.
Because
although I was away, you know, and living in Arizona for 12 years,
sure.
So
mm-hmm.
we lost contact for a little while, and then when I came back to the Lighthouse 5 years ago.
We met at another convention.
Yeah, exactly, right.
Yeah. Do you still have the annual convention for Stargardt's?
We don't.
Okay.
But we did for many years, and we're talking about maybe resurrecting it again with Dr. Fishman's help.
Okay.
So.
All right, well, that sounds cool. Now, here's an interesting wrinkle to this whole thing. The fact that you, Tom, have Stargardt's, but you didn't develop it until you were past your teens and heading into your 20s. You were 19, you said, before we got on
there. Right, right. I had gone through school in high school with pretty much normal vision, although it was kind of interesting looking back. Things were happening to me that didn't happen to a lot of kids.
Sure,
you know?
Sure.
And I was always sitting up close to the TV. I could still hear my mom's voice, get back from the TV.
You're going to go blind for next.
Yeah.
You know, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
But I was driving, you know, I was playing baseball and football in high school. So
you did everything that the normal teenager would do.
And then I playing baseball, I saw the ball go up in the air and then sort of like disappear and then reappear again. Like it hit right in the blind spot.
Sure.
But I didn't know I had a blind spot, you know, until a ball went into it and then came out of it. And so.
Were you playing outfield or something?
I was, yeah.
Okay.
And what happened was that we went to our family doctor, an eye doctor, and he said, well, you know, I'm thinking mom and dad both wear glasses, so I'm going to probably need glasses.
Sure.
And he said, well, I'm looking at your back of your eye, and it's something different. And he said, I'm going to send you to University of Chicago,
uh-huh.
which was actually Dr. Fishman's uncle, Dr. Alex Krill,
uh-huh.
at the time was a world-renowned doctor in Stargardt disease,
sure.
who diagnosed me, and I was 19 years old. And I still remember the look on my parents' face. They were shocked, being a recessive gene. We had no one in our family history that we knew of that had this before.
Right.
So they said, just hold the book closer. And, you know, there really wasn't a lot of resources at the time that I knew about. And it was pretty devastating, although it didn't change my life right away.
Right.
One of my eyes stayed pretty good. I was able to drive until I was about 25 years old.
Okay, and then you realized that
the big change was driving. Yeah,
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 yeah. And now you were from birth, if I'm not mistaken, when we were talking before time, right?
I was. It wasn't diagnosed until I was about maybe 7. So at reading age,
right?
Because I guess that's when they could really tell. But yeah, I mean, since then it was just why doesn't she's not looking straight? She's sitting close to the TV, holding stuff closer. But then until I got to first or second grade, I think we finally got diagnosed again. We went to like 50 doctors before someone was able to tell us what was really wrong.
Right.
And then I remember my first doctor, actually, she was a pediatric ophthalmologist, and she, her name was also Dr. Fishman.
Uh-huh.
It was Dr. Deborah Fishman, and she referred us to Dr.
Gerald Fishman, yeah.
And then, you know, we started getting answers, and then, again, met Tom and everything. So we were like fish out of water because, again, in our family, we didn't know of it ever.
Existed.
Never heard of it. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's, but see, I think where I'd like to see talk a little bit more about it is the fact that you had normal vision. And then Anna did not have normal vision at all. So she pretty much was like I was when I had, you know, only vision in one eye and I was very myopic and that sort of thing. That was all I knew.
Yeah.
So to me, that was normal. And to you, the vision you had was normal, right?
Sure.
Yeah.
Right, right.
Yeah.
And the big changes were like, you know, being in school, I was really having a tough time reading.
Sure.
Although I was an art major at the time, so my paintings and drawings just got bigger and bigger and bigger. Nobody knew the wiser.
But they could be worth a lot of money these days, you know.
Right,
look at Picasso and that stuff he drew.
The most embarrassing thing, you know, peer pressure and having friends on campus where I would walk right past people.
And not know
where
they were.
Like facing the sun or whatever,
yeah.
And just walk right past them.
Yeah.
And it was like, what's with you, you know?
Yeah, people think you're rude.
Yeah.
You're making eye contact or you don't say hi.
Now,
do
you have facial recognition?
No, not any longer.
You don't have it any longer. How about you?
If they're closer up and it's more of like not just face but like the whole body type. Once you get to know someone
mm-hmm.
well enough,
mm-hmm.
you know their walk or, you know, just things
sure.
like that help you recognize them. And again, if they're close enough, then yeah, it's easier to. Funny story, actually. I ran into Tom.
Did you hurt him?
Buzz.
No, okay, no, go ahead.
And we both didn't recognize each other.
No kidding.
Again, we've known
She looked at me, I looked at her, I thought, I don't know if that's on him or not. You know, I hate to just say something.
And again, I was like, right. You're really tall. So I was like, I think that is him.
That could be him, yeah.
But I didn't want to say hi to the wrong person.
It's so funny that you should say that because that brings up like a story of a joke that I heard earlier in the week, right?
Yeah.
And it was about a fellow who lost his wife in the produce section. In a supermarket.
Uh-huh.
So he walks up and there's this beautiful woman standing there and he walks up to the beautiful woman and he says, excuse me, would you mind talking to me for a few minutes? And she says, well, sure, it's kind of a weird request, but I'll talk to you. And she says, why do you want me to do that? He says, well, because there's this uncanny thing that always happens. As soon as I start talking to a beautiful woman, my wife shows up, so I wouldn't have lost her. So it's like you two guys, you know, is that a not? No, maybe it's not her, so I'm not going to say anything. You know, that's the whole thing. Did it, when you, obviously, were diagnosed of having Stargardt's on him,
mm-hmm.
Did your family treat you any different?
I think they were just concerned. I mean, my parents have done everything in their power to help me, you know, in whatever way they could.
Sure.
As far as, like, extended family, they were just, there was a lot of, like, maybe it's misdiagnosed. Maybe
right.
we should, you know, just kind of like one of those too many cooks spoil the broth
right.
sort of thing.
Right.
We just had a lot of opinions on maybe that's not it. Maybe she's just faking it to get attention. I actually got that.
Did you really? Yeah.
Which is actually a common in some people, you know, that when they're younger,
yeah,
and it happens, you know, where children need attention or whatever.
Yeah. So I mean, I've been through, but my immediate family has been nothing but, you know, supportive. And they just, my mom would just, try this mind fire, try this, do whatever. She does make sure whatever you can possibly think of.
To make it work for you. She wants to make it work.
Exactly.
Do you, have you had much change in your condition?
Yeah, definitely. It wasn't as bad up until high school. I was able to read printed material, mm-hmm. like size, let's say 12 font, by getting closer to it.
Right.
Now I do need some sort of magnification.
Okay.
And as far as like lighting, that's changed a little bit, just, you know, brightness, things like that. But yeah, I've definitely increased in magnification as well as, I mean, nowadays everything's on the computer.
Right.
So technology, I think, really makes your
actually
eyes
helps you out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It helps you out, but then it also makes your eyes work a little harder when you're constantly staring at screens.
Sure.
So.
Yeah.
And what happened with me was, I think psychologically, you know, having normal vision and having it taken away, I was fighting it. I was angry at the world,
right.
you know. know, I went through, I mean, I'm sure you went through it too, right. But I really went through it. I mean, I was not a happy camper.
You saw camper. The other side.
Sure.
You saw the grass.
And especially giving up driving and just getting right. angry all the time and not wanting.
Frustration
even,
too.
Yeah.
A lot of frustration.
Wanting, and not
yeah.
knowing what to do right. and not the
My
simplest
thing
things, right?
Too, yeah, yeah. I mean, I never got to experience it. I think it right. would have been definitely harder to give it up. But I love cars. I, you know, just to get behind the wheel and, like, race or something would be so fun. Right. So not being able to do that, you know, when you turn 16, everyone's getting their permits and everyone's driving.
And you couldn't do it.
Yeah. Yeah. So that really posed a challenge, not just in school and college, but when I was looking for jobs.
Sure.
Because I always had to think of
transportation. How do I get there? Yeah, exactly. Tom,
I actually dropped out of college after several years because I just could not continue my reading. And actually, I thought, what kind of job could I do? I heard about the Chicago Lighthouse, believe it or not.
Sure.
Came down here from the suburbs, you know, on the train.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, oh, this is a place for the blind. You know, I'm not sure I want to go there.
Right,
and I
right.
saw dogs and canes, and it scared me even more.
Right.
You know?
Right.
But they actually met with a job counselor named Jim Kestelute.
Oh, we all know that guy.
Yeah, former director here. And but the thing that turned my life around was Chris Montgomery, who worked here at the time, had a CCTV.
Chris Montgomery, I remember. Yeah. Yeah, I know Chris too, yeah.
And so she showed me, she has Stargardt's, and she said, oh, I have the same thing. And it was the first person I ever met.
Right.
And then she says, let me show you how I read. And I looked at that machine, and my eyes, it just, I couldn't believe that I could see the words.
Right.
You know, and I actually went home and just sat in the chair, cried a little bit that night.
Yeah.
And thought, you know what, I need something like that
right.
to go back to school someday.
Sure.
Yeah.
But it took months and months and months of, you know, trying to read really slowly on
right.
this stupid machine. I was still fighting it,
yeah.
you know. But at least it was got me back to school, you know.
It's funny you should say that because Jim said the same thing about when he first came here and worked with a low vision clinic here.
Uh-huh.
Dr. Howard Lieberman, who was my ophthalmologist for many, 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 many years, worked here. Dr. Rosenblum
yes.
put a pair of glasses on Jim. And he said for the first time in his life, he was actually able to see words.
Yeah.
He said, unless you have not experienced that, you don't really appreciate how important just seeing the word the
exactly,
is.
Exactly,
because
yeah.
you've missed so much. Has your condition stayed pretty stable over the years, Tom?
It stayed stable from about 25 to about 45 or 50. And
okay.
then over the last several years, I've had maybe 5 or 10% more decline.
Decline.
I always tell the joke. They told me there was two types of macular degeneration. There was juvenile and senile.
Right.
And and so my juvenile is now turning into senile. Yeah. Right. And but it's. I guess it's fairly common. You don't.
Sure.
I don't lose my peripheral vision, which mm-hmm. is very good. And I can still do many, many things, which
sure.
I'm grateful for. But yeah, I can't take steps as fast, and curves throw me from time to time, things like that. So it's definitely a little bit worse. But all in the name of the game, the central vision loss, you know, was stable for
sure.
all those years. And
are you going to? Are you comfortable with the fact that you may, if it decreases again anymore, have to use something like a cane or something?
You know, I did start using what they call it, has something new called an identity cane or
right.
ID cane.
Right.
So with the traveling that I do.
What is that anyway?
Around the country, it's a skinnier, lightweight, smaller piece cane. It's like it's seven little pieces. So it'll actually fit in like my dress pants when I'm going out.
Oh, really? Okay.
It'll go right in my pants pocket. And then, of course, when I want to board early on Southwest, I pull that cane out. And it's like the magic cane, you know. Sure, come with me, sir. We'll show you how, you know.
It's the magic wand.
It is. And or crossing the street when there'd be
sure.
several hundred people coming towards me.
Yeah.
If I pull that out,
it's like the parting. Yeah, I was just going to say Moses parting than that. Do you sell those in the store?
We do, yeah.
You do, okay.
They're ID canes. And I think they're really neat because, you know, I don't need it all the time. I don't need it for mobility
right.
necessarily, but it does identify me as which I would have never used when I was in my 20s. You
sure.
know, it's just not.
Well, it's the eagle thing.
Yeah.
You
yeah,
know, you
yeah.
you wanted to hide it.
Yeah.
Now, as far as you're concerned, Adam, do you hide it or do friends know that you have the eye condition?
That's a funny thing. A lot of people don't realize it.
Okay.
I think I've You know, I've had that coping process where I have had to hide it so much. Just because I'm a very independent person.
Right.
I don't like the pity or the just the questions.
Sure.
There's so many questions, and sometimes it's fine, but
right.
a lot of people are just very ignorant about things like this. So if I need to bring it up, I'll bring it up.
Right.
If it doesn't affect what I'm doing, my conversation.
Then you don't do it.
I don't bring it up. So yeah, I mean, it's not necessarily that obvious,
mm-hmm.
but I don't make direct eye contact. So then some people kind of figure that out after
a while.
Like, yeah.
Now, you were able to get married, Tom.
Yes.
You had a family,
uh-huh.
you had children and everything yep. else, and grandchildren now, and,
right.
and the whole thing. So for somebody to think that they have Stargardt's and the world is coming to an end, that's not true.
No, it's not true. And I think one of the benefits to the Stargardt conventions that we had for so many years was not the people and the kids who had Stargardt's, because we're all actually doing okay.
Right.
It's the parents who are, like, freaking out.
Sure.
You know, thinking, my son or my daughter, they have high hopes. What does this mean for their life? And so
yeah.
to sit in a room and meet a lawyer or a teacher or whatever, it
yeah.
is, you know, someone who's gone to college. And, of course, later I was able to go to graduate school and
sure.
to listen to books instead of read them. And,
right.
and I used to fall asleep listening to them. And then I have to
wake up. You've got to try to figure out where you were in the book. That's right.
Yeah.
I think that sums it up so well, because the statement was made earlier that
yeah.
technology actually has helped.
It really
and,
is.
And
yeah.
there's
amazing.
Been so many improvements. Mm-hmm. You were talking to Brian a few weeks back about a device that you could actually wear on the glasses, and if you saw somebody down the hall, there would be the recognition of it. So that actually,
the face, and it would actually say in your ear,
yeah.
a little earbud, you know, here comes
yeah,
Bill.
Right.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So that really helps somebody, with Stargardt's.
I think it's not, we haven't seen the actual device. We're hoping to get it next month.
Okay.
But, I mean, based on the video that I've seen and how it works, I mean, it would be a life-changing event to have
Definitely.
Technology
Again.
Like that.
Again, yeah, there we go.
Or the eSight glasses, which we're also looking at now, we have here,
right.
which are like video display glasses where you can walk around, go to a museum,
right.
be able to, wherever you point your nose, the camera is pointing at
and see something,
yeah,
and actually
yeah.
see it and zoom in on it.
Yeah.
Well, listen, thanks for sharing your stories. I appreciate it.
All right, Jill.
And if anybody needs more information about Stargardt's, they can call the Lighthouse, 312-666-1331. Ask for the Pangaea Center for Retina Research, because Dr. Fishman would be more than glad, the person probably to talk to about it, or even somebody, I guess, in the low vision clinic, too.
Exactly.
Dr. Crumless and the crew out there, and then they can bug you, too.
At the store, they can come in and
yeah.
sit down, and we can talk about all the different technologies
sure.
and things that are out there to help. There are so many resources
right.
now. So
yeah.
Right, and it all starts with making that first phone call, and sometimes that's the hardest thing to do. But once you make it, boy, you're going to find out there's a whole world out there for
just
you.
Meeting the right people, exactly.
Absolutely. Tom Persky, we're going to have your corner coming up in a minute, so don't go too far away.
Okay.
And then Anam. Anam. Listen, whatever it is.
I'm correcting you.
I know, because I just do it wrong all the time. Anyway, thanks, guys, for joining me. I really appreciate you being on the program. We'll be back with the corner in just a minute. This is The Beacon.
Are you ready for kids who eat healthy? Good nutrition can lead to great things. To find out how a healthy lifestyle can help your child succeed, go to mypyramid.gov. A public service announcement brought to you by the Ad Council and USDA.
Well, that's our program about Stargardt's. I hope you've enjoyed the presentation this morning and walk away a little bit more enlightened about what Stargardt's is. And if you may know someone in your family who has a condition that sounds similar to what we were talking about this morning, you can either encourage them to get into an optometrist or a low vision specialist and then move along and eventually, hopefully, be able to come over to our store at the Chicago Lighthouse and find out what kind of adaptive technology is available by dealing with our low vision clinic. Brian Hawkins is here, and he and our Tom Persky are going to be joining us to tell us what's new in the store and see what's going on as far as any road trips for the folks down there who bring all the adaptive technology around. After all, it's our time to find out what's new.
Hello, everyone. Welcome. welcome into Tom's Corner. And Tom, you are doing double duty today. We heard from you earlier.
How are you?
I'm doing great. Got back from Arizona, and it's snowed twice since I've been back. So,
so you're the reason.
That's right. Everyone's blaming me, which, you know, I deserve it, I guess. But I got an exciting product that I wanted to talk about today.
Oh, good.
Called the OrCam.
Okay.
And it's made in Israel, and many people have heard about it because it's been in the New York Times and many, many other places. There's actually two types of OrCams. One is called the OrCam Reader, mm-hmm. and the other is called the OrCam Eye. But I thought I would just briefly go over the OrCam Reader today and tell you what it does.
Yeah, let's hear it.
So it is a very small device that actually is attached by a little bracket to a normal pair of glasses. I would say it's about the size of a cigarette that would be kind of flat instead of round. So it's about that long.
Mm-hmm.
And it goes on the inside of your temple piece of your glasses. So that part is very, very small. And obviously you can take it everywhere you go.
Right.
It does have a wire that goes from the back of your ear there down to a processor. They call it a computer quad-core processor, which is a very powerful computer that's about the size of maybe half the size of a cigarette package.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's doing all the processing. It has no visual display, so people with low vision or totally blind could use this product because it's going to read out loud to you. And it's activated by either a few short buttons. For instance, there's a power button, and then on the same side an up and down button for volume. And then the other side just has a one button to activate it. So a totally blind person might just hold up a paper or a book in front and just hit the button. It would take a picture of the whole page
right.
and read it out loud. So that's pretty cool. For those with low vision who maybe can see enough to see where an article begins in a newspaper
right.
or on a flyer, like I have on my hand.
There it goes.
It just went to sleep. It should be able to point to the area of the page that you'd like to start at.
Waking up. Battery is 60% charged.
So as you heard, it woke up again.
Right.
It's because I want to use it, and it tells you what the battery is. So I'm going to point to the OrCam brochure right now, and it makes that little beeping noise.
And I heard it.
And within a few seconds.
Individual attention. Complimentary one-on-one training session. Each OrCam device is hand-delivered by a certified OrCam trainer who will teach you how to use your new device. It arrives at your doorstep complete with all accessories included. We believe in providing an exceptional experience. OrCam enhances quality of life. I can get a quick view of the newspaper without all of the strain. I read my email from my smartphone on the go. With the OrCam device, you really get more out of life. I feel less dependent and more relaxed. Mo Chef, legally blind from childhood. Sitting at a restaurant with a friend and using the OrCam device meant that we didn't have to focus on my disability because I was able to read the menu on my own. WS. Recent rapid deterioration of vision. The OrCam device's intuitive point and speak functionality makes it easy for anyone to quickly learn how to use. Brian Walensky, OD, FAAO.
So that's it. It read the whole thing in a matter of seconds,
right.
which is pretty neat. I like the pointing feature, too, because you can actually skim material, point to, let's say, a column in the newspaper. And if you leave your finger there, it will just start to read. And then if you hear that you're really not interested in that area of the page, you just simply move your finger to another column and listen briefly to that. So it allows a person to skim from item to item to item. It also will read things on a bulletin board. It will actually, if the sign is large enough, you can read a sign in a store. I even used it to read a billboard across the street.
Oh, wow.
Because the billboard had text that was recognizable
mm-hmm.
just by pointing at it. So it really activates by using your finger any sign or anything. And again, it's called the OrCam Reader. It sells for $2,500. So it's pretty straightforward, and we'll talk about the more complicated OrCam. Maybe next week would be good.
And is that it's out and available now?
It is. You can come to the Chicago Lighthouse and get a quick evaluation and or You can actually go to OrCam.com and purchase it directly from the company, and then someone from the company can come out to your home, or if you want to come here to be trained, the company will pay is paying us to train the people who need the training.
Right.
And so it's worked out very, very well. We're one of the first in the country to have it.
Okay.
So it's pretty cool.
Now, how about upcoming road shows?
Road shows this week is all our right. first one, so we're all geared up. And we heard it was going to be 60 degrees on Tuesday, so no snow, hopefully.
Get out your short sleeves.
Right, March 8th. And I have the flyer here in front of me. Maybe I should point to it and see if it'll read it.
Yeah.
Right there.
All text is too small. Try to hold it closer.
So, see, when you try to demonstrate something, it doesn't work. It's March 8th at Merrillville, Indiana. It's right. called the Trade Winds Organization, and it's from 10 o'clock to 3 o'clock. It's an open house, free, open to the public. We'll mm-hmm. have many, many devices to show you, including the OrCam. The next one.
Repeating from the beginning. Next show, Wednesday. March 1st, 6:201-610 a.m., 3 p.m. Main Township, 1700 Ballard Road, Community Room, Lower Level Park Ridge, Illinois, 60068.
So that said 1-6, so we really meant 16th, March 16th.
Oh, slash. Okay.
And then we have also one in March 31st coming up, which is in Wheeling Township, which is on Arlington Heights Road in Arlington Heights. And they're all from 10 o'clock to 3 o'clock. They're all on our website. Go to chicagolighthouse.org and click on events, and you'll see a full calendar of many, many shows that we have this coming year now that it's snow is going to be gone for good. I'm going to promise that now.
Uh-oh. Yeah. You might be in trouble. But at least the road show is back on track, and you can go out and try out many of the products that we talk about here on Tom's Corner.
He's Tom Persky. I'm Brian Hawkins, and this is The Beacon.
Well, that's it. It's going to take care of things for us this morning on our special edition of The Beacon, talking about Stargardt's disease. Many thanks to Dr. Janet Slick, our executive director at the Lighthouse, who, with her support and that of the board, has made this show possible. Lainey will be back next week. It's her birthday weekend, so we're going to have to razz the heck out of her. And if you want to send her a card, you can do that. You can send it to us at the Beacon Show. Her name is Lainey Kleeman. Just send it to Lainey at Chicago Lighthouse, 1850 West Roosevelt Road, Chicago, Illinois, 60608. And if you send her a card, maybe we'll have her read them on the air. Thanks to Brian Hawkins, who not only did Tom's Corner, but produced our program, makes it sound as good as he does. And we'll see you back here next Saturday morning at 7 o'clock. Stick around. The Mighty House people are right in the wings, getting ready to go on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM. We'll see you next week.